Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 55 for February 7th, 2009. jQuery. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time to talk floss. And I'm not talking dental floss. I'm talking free, libre, open source software, the good stuff. The stuff that we all use every day, every time we surf the net, every time we use OpenOffice. Frankly, the subject we're going to cover today is something that you will run into practically every web page you go to. Here he is to talk about it, Randall Schwartz. Hi, Randall.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
Stonehenge.com is a place to find Randall. Good to talk
exactly.
to you.
Exactly. I know, and it seems so regular now that the show is weekly again. It's really been really cool talking to you every week.
And we have some great stuff coming up. We'll talk about that later in the show. How's your arm, first of all?
Oh, well, as I said a couple shows ago, my therapist found that I wasn't getting any enough healing early enough. So we stopped the physical therapy, although I'm doing the home exercises for it. And I got to see my doctor yesterday, and he did a few new x-rays, and he says, you should be done by now, and you're only at about 50% for stuff. So he's a little worried. He's thinking there's too much scar tissue or something in there. So tomorrow I'm going in for a CAT scan. I'm not sure whether I have to bring my own cat. They didn't actually tell me.
That would be funny.
It wasn't in the instructions.
Do I need to bring my cat?
Yeah. And how fast do they swing it around?
Can the cat eat before he comes in or not?
But the point of this is that they need to figure out what's really going on with the soft tissue. And he was talking about stuff like, he may have to go back in and with an arthroscope to look to see what's actually inside. More surgery. So I'm not really looking forward to that. But he says, no, there's definitely no reason for me to be at this point. The bones are all in the right place. Although he was a little worried, my ulna. This is something I don't like to say in public, but apparently my ulna is 0.1 millimeters too long.
You got a long ulna.
And the problem with that is that would actually possibly hang up on the radius as it tries to rotate around. That may be part of the problem. And that would mean going into the middle of my ulna and cutting out a half a millimeter slice in the middle and going through all sorts of recovery again. So not looking forward to that.
To quote the poet.
Yes.
Come take a hold, just grab a hold of my body and mind. Soon we'll be making it. Honey, oh, we're feeling fine. You're my medicine. Open up and let me in. Darling, you're so great. I can't wait for you to operate. When I get this feeling, I need ulna healing.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
The great Marvin Gaye, ladies and gentlemen.
There is one piece of thing I found out of in the conversation yesterday, though, as he was looking at my x-rays for my bones. He said, he knows I'm in software. So he looks at me, he goes, is there any way you could write a better piece of software to do this?
Piece of crap.
Really sucks. And I said, I was using an open source piece of software to examine the stuff I got out of Stanford. And he says, open source. I run Linux on my laptop. I love that stuff.
Wow.
So I actually said, hey, I've been talking about you all the way through the last four or five shows because he knows I do this podcast, too. So I think I'm going to take a mic in with him and get a short interview with him about how a doctor is actually using open source software in his practice.
I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah. So we're going to have some audio of him sometimes. And he says, but don't do it till I actually fix your arm because I don't want you to say anything bad about me. So we'll probably get him on a future show, but that'll be really great to get the doctor that's been responsible all this time. And here, that here's a guy who's using open source software day by day, except for the stuff he's using at the hospital, unfortunately. But the stuff he uses on his personal laptop is all open source software. So this is great.
Now, if you have a large ulna, it doesn't harm, it doesn't impede your podcasting abilities, does it?
It clearly doesn't, because I'm obviously doing this every week. But the other show that I do every week, thank you for bringing it up, is podcast.insightcruises.com. This is where I do a weekly show based usually on material that I've taken from some of the recent cruises. And if you've been listening the last few weeks, you've been listening to Ara Flato talking about the myths around flights of airplanes. But we just started a sequence by Dr. Alan Nathan. He's talking about the physics of home runs. He's a baseball fanatic, and he's also a particle physicist. He's combine the two of these things. So he actually has like equations to say, well, the spin of the ball does this and it creates that sort of force and it has to go at this particular position. And of course, in a vacuum, it would go even further. And that shows why in Denver, the balls fly slightly further in Denver. It's really cool stuff. So we've got him starting this week, a 3-part series on that. So go to podcast.insightcruises.com and check that out. And we're getting a lot of feedback on that. A lot of Floss listeners are going over there, and I just really wanted to make sure people knew about this series because there's some really good content coming up in that. So
that is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Now, this week, I said we were going to talk about something that you use every day, whether or not you know it, whether or not you know you're using open source software.
Well, you know, if you've been to Twitter recently, if you've been to Match.com,
Leoville.com, Drupal,
CBS News, Box.net, Dig.
Yeah, we're all using it.
Slashdot. They're all using behind the scenes. Well, not really behind the scenes because it goes down to your browser every time, but they're all using this thing called jQuery. Now, jQuery is a JavaScript library that allows the authors of JavaScript tools to make more interaction, more Web 2.0 kind of active stuff, to be able to sort of ignore what browser it's actually running on, sort of hiding all the details behind it and doing things a little bit simpler way. And it's similar to, you know, we did the show on Yahoo User Interface a year ago, the UE library.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit like that, but it's just the bottom layer JavaScript part. It's not everything that UE is with all the widgets and everything on the tops.
Right.
Just the bottom layer, but it's really lightweight, being used more and more. It's a de facto standard. In fact, we'll have to ask our guest just how widely deployed it actually is. I'm sure we're going to get some surprising answers there.
Well,
but I have none other than Mr. John Rezig, who is the creator of jQuery, to speak to us today.
Oh, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. So John is the most odd of all things, a job open source JavaScript programmer.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a lot of open source work done in JavaScript, I wonder?
Well, it sort of would have to be, because think about it. I mean, we talked about this with the UE guys, is that since it is being downloaded to the browser, it's obviously going to be source code. So you might as well be legit about it and say, here, you can go ahead and share this. You're probably going to reverse engineer it anyway. So it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, you have to jump through hoops to make JavaScript obscure.
And then it probably will break on some browsers through the obfuscation that you're trying to do.
Right.
I know people have similar problems in Perl. When they try to obfuscate it, it actually breaks the Perl sometimes. So.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So JavaScript is almost necessarily open source, whether it's licensed open source or not.
It's certainly easy to reverse engineer. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, let's get John on the line. John, we're going to call him in via Skype. He's been in the chat room all this time. Hi, John.
Oh, hello.
Welcome to Floss Weekly.
Well, thanks for having me.
And they were saying in the chat room, now, John, the guests are usually well advised not to watch chat during the show. And you said, I have 14 chat windows open all the time. It's not going to bug me.
It's more than I have.
Is that typical that I think that's true nowadays that people, especially if you're working on open source, often have numerous chat rooms, IRC rooms open, particularly the rooms that are related to their project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have rooms open for, you know, for jQuery, for the different, you know, jQuery subrooms, and then all the different Mozilla rooms, you know, for my day job. So I just, yeah, there's a lot to monitor.
So you work for the Mozilla project?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, that must be interesting. Do you do JavaScript stuff for them, or?
Yeah, I do all sorts of JavaScript work there. So I guess currently a lot of my focus is on analyzing JavaScript performance and really trying to get a better picture there. At least at Mozilla, that's what I'm spend a lot of time on right now.
Did you always write JavaScript? Was that your first language?
No. I guess my first big language, I would say, is I did a lot of Perl. Back in high school, back in college.
Perl probably prepares you well for JavaScript. All right, that was mean of me to say. I take it back. Mm-hmm. JavaScript is supposed to look like C, and I mean, when you look at it superficially, it looks a lot like C. But mm-hmm. I know a lot of people think of JavaScript as kind of hard to use and broken, and partly because its implementation seems to vary across browsers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what you end up with is you have sort of this weird situation. There's JavaScript, the language, but everyone is familiar with JavaScript in the context of a web browser. I mean, it's just that's where everyone uses it.
Right.
The problem is, though, is that in a browser, you're constantly using JavaScript with the DOM, the document object model. And the Dom is the thing that's the mess. It's tons of bugs, and that's the thing that's implemented very poorly across browsers. The JavaScript language itself is it's because of, you know, because of this, you know, just sort of cloud, it's you know, very deceptive, especially since it's actually a really elegant language, and a lot of people have just, you know, really fallen for it, so myself included.
So it's appropriate that you work for Mozilla, because JavaScript was originally developed at Netscape, I understand, for the Netscape browser, which, of course, the source code eventually formed the basis for Mozilla.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been programming since Netscape in JavaScript?
I only started working for Mozilla here recently, early 2007.
Okay.
And I really only started getting into JavaScript, I would say, late 2004 or early 2005. I'm a latecomer, but I think that's okay. JavaScript has been getting better.
It's settled down a lot. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It used to be a lot rougher.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also independently standard too, which, you know, before it was just whatever the implementation happened to be on Mozilla, but now there's ECMA standards for it. So it can be implemented according to standard.
Mm-hmm. Which is really nice, since everyone can just point back to this, you know, specification, and there's, you know, the definite defined way how to implement this.
And JavaScript has some really elegant things going for it too. I mean, the whole prototype method of doing class inheritance is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's. I would say a couple of things about JavaScript. But JavaScript, it's a functional programming language in, you know, C-like clothes. but it ends up being very, very nice to use, especially within the context of a browser, I feel. But at the same time, you have these other features, like you mentioned, like a prototypal inheritance, which are really weird if you think about it. JavaScript is definitely the most popular language to have it. And, I mean, outside of JavaScript, there's very few. I think IO is one. But you know, it's a very, I guess you might even call it experimental feature. But yeah, it makes for a very interesting programming experience.
I remember being on a panel with Brandon back in the early days, back in 98 or 99 during one of the web conferences. And he started out his part of the talk. I was talking on Perl. He was talking on JavaScript. And he said, first, I just want to apologize for the optional semicolons. That was a mistake.
They're not optional.
Yeah.
So put your semicolons in. So, and one of the things I notice is a lot of people who work with Java end up using libraries, and particularly libraries like jQuery or Prototype or Scriptaculous. There are a lot of them out there. UE, we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Does that just to make it easier to write?
Yeah. There's two reasons for libraries coming about and really becoming popular. The first is that, you know, because of all these browser bugs, you know, that I mentioned before.
You needed a library just to test for browser bugs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah.
You know, there's pretty much any method that you could possibly think of in the DOM API has a bug in it somewhere. In some browser, and you'll run across it eventually. But the thing is that, you know, why bother with that? You know, personally, you know, I hate it personally. You know, when I'm trying to build a website, I just want to build a website. I don't want to have to get bogged down in some, you know, horrible buggy mess for, you know, days on end.
So the library says if it's IE5, do it this way. If it's IE6, do it this way. That kind of thing.
Roughly. One technique that's becoming more popular now is it's being very smart about it. It's not just saying that, oh, this browser does it one way. It says, you know, does this browser have this feature that I need to work? Mm-hmm. And then based upon that, you know, behaving in a particular manner. But yeah.
And degrade gracefully if it doesn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
And also the DOM model has changed over time. So you have access to more pieces of things as time went on, and you have to be able to isolate that in your code too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The DOM itself, it's a functional API. I would not say it's a beautiful API. And so, a nice thing that, you know, libraries are doing is making that a very, you know, likable experience.
Well, there's also this big divide between how you specified node levels for various nodes in your tree, your DOM tree, versus, you know, a much more elegant syntax of CSS, which was sort of specified classes in a very nice way. And I know that part of what you do with jQuery was sort of unify those to make that all easier to get access to, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your design philosophies behind jQuery. I mean, other libraries were out there. What did you see in them that you wanted to do differently? What was your specification that you gave yourself when you started? What were you aiming at?
It may have been my my pro background, but
CPAN. I understand.
I'm sorry.
I like you know, syntactically short code.
Right.
I don't like a lot of cruft. And when I started writing out jQuery, it was a personal challenge to myself to try and write, just very, very, you know, terse code.
Not obscure terse.
Absolutely. And that was, you know, how you know, short could the code become, but without, you know, removing its actual intended meaning.
Yeah. concise, but clear.
Exactly. So, I mean, it went through many iterations, but the big thing that all of jQuery revolves around is the use of CSS selectors. So being able to find elements on a page using CSS selectors and then performing a series of actions against them. This is pretty much everything in jQuery boils down to, you know, this finding an action sequence.
It's almost like a CSS extension in a way.
I guess it depends. Like I've seen people equate it to that. It isn't, you know, it doesn't interface with the browser's native CSS mm-hmm. capabilities. It is purely JavaScript.
But it extends CSS.
In the sense that, yeah, it implements the existing CSS selector standard and adds in additional selectors that can be used.
Got it.
And so the nice thing is
you're still working
in
CSS a lot.
Yeah, well, not in the sense that you're writing, you know, new style sheets or things like that. You're writing pure JavaScript code. But the thing is that you have you're emphasizing and you're enhancing your experience by using these CSS selectors. Since these CSS selectors make it so much easier to get started, and you know, if you want to find, I guess the big thing that ends up making jQuery so powerful is that, like, for example, you rarely ever loop. You perform actions against sets of items. Like you would say, you know, find all the divs on the page and then, you know, remove them or add a class to them. And it ends up having just, you know, it makes it very simple, very short, and has a really low learning curve, which is great.
So like the in naked, in without jQuery, without this extra CSS searching library, if I mm-hmm. wanted to say take all the divs that had a particular class, I'd have to first find all the divs, create a little list of those, then ask each one of those in a browser specific way, what classes do you have and does it include a particular class that I'm interested in, and mm-hmm. then go ahead and finally do the action on that. Whereas yep. with what I've seen in the examples of jQuery, you just simply say, you actually write it like in CSS syntax as a quoted string and passing it as one of the parameters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And yeah, that's hoping that what you just wrote doesn't have any obscure browser bugs involved with it, too.
Yeah, it really looked elegant. I mean, I really didn't get much into jQuery until preparing for the show. And it just, I'm amazed. I want to go out and start using it right away. There's definitely a lot of really nice design elements. I also like talk about the dollar sign. What is that? What's up with that?
So, that comes from the old, so when I released jQuery, I was writing it in late 2005. And at the time, sort of the big library in the block was Prototype. And it's still, you know, a very popular library. Prototype is bundled with Ruby on Rails. So anyone who's using Ruby on Rails, you know, has opportunity to use Prototype. And they had this convention where they had a function named dollar sign. So in JavaScript, you can have functions named dollar sign for whatever reason. Mm. And they had it such that if you passed in a string to it, it would find an element by ID, only ID, and then return that. Mm-hmm. So I looked at that. I was like, well, that's good. I like it. It's nice and short, but it needs to do more. So that's when I rolled in all the extra, I wanted to expand upon that. I wanted to add in CSS selectors. What evolved out of that is that jQuery has two names. There's $, and then there's jQuery. So you can call, you can say jQuery a CSS selector and continue. Mm-hmm. As a result, the $ has become a very popular function name, because of prototype, because of jQuery. We've evolved and we've made it such that, we call it no conflict mode, that you can actually introduce jQuery into a page and make sure that it won't conflict with other libraries that are on the page.
Because nothing else is going to use $.
Oh, well, we assume by default that you're going to use $.
Right.
But in the off chance that, you know, you're introducing into a page that has...
Then you'd use jQuery.
Then you'd use jQuery and you'd probably toss in this no conflict mode or something.
Right.
So the elegant part of that, which I really liked, is that I remember from prototype, I say $ and an ID, but you just say $ and a class or $ and anything else. It just works. So you recognize all those different forms and kind of dispatch the different parts of your code then.
That feels Perl-like to me. It does. That feels a little Perl influenced. Maybe that's just me.
And you ran into a couple places where there's an overlap. I think it was like with square brackets or something.
Yeah. So the square brackets, that was, I assume in this case, you're talking about the like finding items by attribute.
Yeah.
That's coming from the CSS selector specification. Mm-hmm. Granted, most people don't use it since most browsers don't support it. Mm. But yeah. Mm.
So give me an idea of some of the things that people do with jQuery.
Oh man, it's really turned into a pretty incredible tool to see what people are doing with it. Like I have a computer science background personally. So, I mean, I wrote it and I scratched my itch. But what I've seen people using it, everything from very simple, enhancements of a website,
I like the slide down stuff, the fade in, fade out stuff.
Oh,
like
sure.
That.
Yeah. Simple effects, simple menus, but people build really interesting, complex things. We have a new sub project in jQuery called jQuery UI, and they have all sorts of things like, drag and drop and modal dialogues and, all sorts of, much more complex interactions. And we're starting to see, some really large, complicated applications being built with jQuery, like Bank of America and, just large institutions that are, really latching on and using jQuery in some pretty cool ways.
Cool.
What's that? Is there something going on out your window? So you're mugging? It sounds like a mugging is going on outside your room. You got the TV on. Are you watching Starsky and Hutch?
No. There's this noise outside.
Okay. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I have to resist all of that. Yeah, yes. We're using jQuery, I think, pretty much on every site on Twitter. We're using it for a variety of different things. And increasingly, I'm seeing people choose jQuery over the other interface libraries. Now, when we talked about UE, Randall, I mean, it sounded like this was a great set of widgets and tools that people might want to use, really, yeah, a library. But it sounds like jQuery is both simpler and more, less and more. Is that an accurate way to describe it, do you think?
Do you want to speak to that, John? Can you compare this
compare
with stuff
to UE?
Like UE?
This is a common challenge and a common misperception, I would say, of jQuery, is that I would argue that it is simpler to use. It is definitely simpler to use than most libraries, and definitely more so than just regular JavaScript and DOM. But that simplicity, it just because it's simple to use doesn't mean that it can't do complex things. Mm-hmm. Even when you're looking at stuff like, the YUI, widgets and stuff like that, jQuery can definitely do that. And I guess one of the things that jQuery, that I'm happy that we did well, is it has a concept of plugins, and we have a huge plugin community of people who author things that can just snap in additional functionality to the library. And that's really helped to grow the jQuery user base quite well.
You're also, somebody's mentioned this in the chat room, and I think it's true. I'm not going to say his handle because it's filthy, but you're also, he thinks I don't know, but I do. You're also not modifying the underlying JavaScript in any way.
That's correct. Yeah, so we keep everything namespaced pretty tightly to make sure that we don't, affect anything outside of jQuery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because we like to make sure that, I guess twofold, one, that nothing outside of us is going to affect us. And second, that we won't affect anything else. And we're starting to see jQuery used in a lot of different like embedded situations, for example. People taking jQuery, putting them in Firefox extensions, injecting jQuery into websites. And,
it's small enough they can do that.
Oh, yeah. It's small enough and it's unobtrusive enough to do that.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Do you have an Akamai host link so people can just include it from the central site, or do you care about hits to your particular web page?
So we provide two sources for pulling straight from us. One is Google provides a CDN that people can pull from, which is very nice of them. And we also provide a source that people can pull from. We have that hosted on Amazon CloudFront.
It's only about 18K, right? It's not very big.
No, it's not that bad.
But if you didn't want to have it on your site, you could literally pull it from Google and not load it. I mean, load it from Google and not have it on your site.
The advantage of having a central URL is that they may have already loaded it when they went to somebody else's page.
Good point.
So that way, using the CDNs are actually a little bit nicer for that. That's why I was
because JavaScript's all client-side, so that 18K has to be pushed all the way down to the browser, and the browser has to hold it in memory.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you were working with trying to isolate the bugs out of the major browsers, which did you find the most troublesome, and which did you find the least troublesome?
I think probably the hardest bug that continues to be just a huge bane is it comes back from the old what's called the DOM zero days. So this is back when JavaScript was just starting to get some sort of structure for manipulating the page. Mm-hmm. And all sorts of little hacks were added in to try and make things easier. So, for example, if you had an object, if you found a form on the page, that form would have a property that would refer to each element that has a specific ID on the page, or within the form. It was nice and convenient at the time, but the problem is now is that it's starting to create all sorts of unintended behavior. And for example, Internet Explorer, if you do get elements by tag name on a page, and one of the elements that you find has an ID of length, it'll overwrite the length property being returned. Oh. And you can't loop over the results anymore.
You don't know the length. Wow.
it's just baffling stuff like this that it just it really makes you scratch your head. And that's probably my least favorite, since it creates the most bizarre situations where bugs pop up.
Can you still work around that, or do you just say don't use dot length or don't use ID of length?
What we end up doing in that case is we loop over the property, so we just start incrementing through, and we hit an undefined value. We assume we're at the end.
Oh, okay.
So we ended up having to rewrite all of our loops inside jQuery. it's just stuff that you shouldn't have to do. You know
what's great about that though is that you found that and fixed that, and now I don't have to think about that and don't get a call from a customer saying, when I built this thing, for some reason it's missing the last four items on there, and I don't have to think about that because you already solved that for me.
Yeah.
So for us, bug fixing is of the utmost importance, and trying to hide browser bugs, because the way I look at it is that every time a browser bug comes up, that's a possibility for someone who's using the library to get frustrated. Mm-hmm. If they're using jQuery, they're like, it's just not working in Safari and IE or wherever. They're gonna be like, well, forget that. I'm just gonna go use something else, or I'm gonna go do it myself, or whatever. But if we can create an experience that is uniform everywhere, and mm-hmm. we can guarantee that it'll work the same. That's just so great. That's a huge part, I think, about jQuery.
Now, I don't want you to say anything that's not going to have you have a job tomorrow, but what about Mozilla? Is it pretty decent? Are there bugs in there that you need to work around, or like early versions of Mozilla that you need to work around in jQuery?
Mozilla has the best DOM implementation in the history of the world.
Is that true?
at least in bugs that I find, Internet Explorer is definitely... has the most.
Even 7 and 8, even the more recent versions.
Yeah. In IE7.
That's the problem. It's different in every version. At least if their bugs were consistent, you'd know what to do. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So IE7, for example, they introduced one new JavaScript feature. Total. They introduced a new XML HTTP request object. But they introduced two new bugs. So they introduced more bugs than they did features. and then in IE8, they're doing good in IE8. They're introducing a bunch of new features. But at the same time, at my last count, they haven't fixed hardly any bugs. I'm very happy that they have introduced stuff the new selectors API that have made implementations run much faster. Mm-hmm. There isn't much being done in the way of bug fixes right now.
Do you think,
especially longstanding ones?
Do you think they look at the way people are using it, like with jQuery, and try to add like the selector feature? Was that added because of? I mean, did they invent that on their own, or is that part of what's being added to like the DOM standard, whatever that is?
The selector one. It is part of the W3C selectors API. Okay. And that came about because of, how it was popularized here in JavaScript libraries. Mm. It's really been great to see that. That was a direct case where JavaScript users all decided that this is the way how they wanted to do things. They wanted to select using CSS selectors. And, browsers started to get together. They started to standardize, and they started to create and then filter back through, come back to the browsers, and hopefully making libraries simpler to implement, but definitely making them faster as well.
So that must be pretty cool, because you're building, you're designing to get the CSS selectors to work, and then eventually that's folding back into the standards. That must be pretty fun.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting.
Is there anything happening within the Mozilla JavaScript team? I guess you're part of that because of stuff you're doing with jQuery. I mean, how close are those connected?
It's roughly connected in that, I communicate with them a lot, but I also communicate with people in all the browser teams. Because that's a really big thing, is that we have to make sure that, we're providing the best experience to the user,
cross browser. I mean,
absolutely. Not only cross browser, but also cross browser in a way that'll be fast everywhere as well.
Right. Do they use jQuery when they're figuring out how to make TraceMonkey go faster?
No, I think that they definitely have, because I've written some of the tests. because part of my job is, again, analyzing JavaScript performance. And in my tests, I included a whole battery of tests that just test JavaScript libraries. So I try to make sure that when improvements come, that libraries are going to get some of that benefit as well.
I'm seeing people in the chat room who say they use jQuery to speed up a lot of things, like JSON calls. You can use jQuery to speed things up.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of times we just happen to know more of the tricks.
Right.
we've been doing this for longer. We know more of the, the cool new things that are coming, and we're able to get it in maybe even before you know about it. So when we do that, you're going to be able to have really the best experience possible.
That's really
And one of the things is you probably know better than, say, a random JavaScript programmer like me what not to do in terms of building large lists that get thrown away and objects that are self-referential for leaking and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's how you underline your code.
How about security? How do you address that? Do you address that? Is that not your job?
I would say it's less of my job. It's in that in the case of jQuery, it's all client side, purely client side JavaScript code. Usually security starts to come more into play when you have a mix of client server or, you know, just server code.
Right.
Since usually that's where the sensitive stuff is and where you have to worry about stuff, you know, like having injection attacks and things of that nature. So in and of itself, jQuery doesn't worry too much about it. But it provides extension points to make sure that, if there's a server side piece of validation or security code, it can snap into it really easily.
Now, I know one of the things you did, as you were talking earlier in the show, you were talking about this CSS library that you came up with, a CSS selector sort of selection thing. I understand that's pulled out as a separate project as well that other people can use independently.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's since gotten pulled out in this new project called Sizzle. Mm-hmm. And because if all of these libraries are implementing the same exact thing over and over again, there, you know, we should be able to collaborate. Mm-hmm. And right now, there has been some collaboration, but it's been pretty small. You know, like you look at one library and you're like, oh, that looks useful. You know, then you talk to them, you know, we're all pretty much MIT licensed. So it's pretty easy. You know, we can borrow in sight. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, bug fixes don't get propagated back or, all the best features don't get spread around. So the fact that we can all collaborate on a single code base means that users are going to be getting a uniform experience everywhere that'll be fast and that'll have and that'll be accounting for all the possible bugs that are out there.
So for something like Prototype, which is being used by all the Ruby on Rails people, mm-hmm. if they install or if Prototype eventually includes this Sizzle library, they'll be able to use these more advanced selectors then.
Absolutely. Yep.
Is that happening already?
So right now I'm working with the Prototype guys, and mm-hmm. I'm also working with the guys on YUI and also the Dojo guys. Mm-hmm. And, they're all very interested in it, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to land it in some more libraries here soon.
That's very cool. So are you eating your own dog food on that? I mean, do you actually have your code separated into Sizzle versus the rest of this or not?
Yeah, so I mean, when I started writing this library, Sizzle was just the code name that I thought of for this new rewrite of our selector engine.
Okay.
And it just so happened that I released it into a source code repository, my personal one. Someone found it, blogged about it, and then suddenly it was like the next day there were other libraries coming and they're like, hey, can we use this? We want to use this. And it was really bizarre because I wasn't expecting this at all. It's just my little project here. It's really starting to get picked up here, which is nice.
I mean, you put something useful on the net and people used it? Wait a second. How did that happen? Was it when somebody wasn't surfing for LOL cats or something? I mean, how do they come across these things?
Fidgetal wanted me to ask you, said there's going to be Visual Studio integration coming up. Is that so?
Correct. Yeah. So
that's cool.
Microsoft, they took a pretty big leap here. We're really excited. And, they looked at their current selection of library, JavaScript library that they have, and all of it's written in house right now. And they wanted to add essentially all the stuff that's in jQuery, CSS selectors, DOM manipulation, all that stuff. And they decided they're like, well, why rewrite it? And then they asked their users, and all the users were like, well, we want jQuery. Why can't we just have jQuery?
Yeah.
We're using it already. And mm-hmm. so they went and they talked to their legal people, and they're like, yeah, let's do it. So now they're going to be shipping jQuery inside Visual Studio, and they're actually going to be providing support for people who are coding using jQuery. And so this is a big step. This is the first time that Microsoft has supported an externally written piece of software, let alone an open source piece of software. And so we're really quite excited about this.
That's really awesome.
Very cool. Very cool.
What do you use to work with jQuery? What do you use, for instance, as a debugger?
So I use a variety of debugging tools. I use the Firebug extension for Firefox a lot. And that's it's very useful. I think you'll find that from most web developers.
They'll
say,
yeah.
It makes many things much easier.
Right.
And so there's that. And I'm at the same time, though, I'm starting to work on some better tools there. This has been, I should say, because a big part of these libraries is having a really good test suite. You have to have a test suite that covers all these weird, oddball, fringe cases that you're going to hit across the browsers. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it creates a very frustrating development environment. Right. every single commit that goes out for every single release, we end up testing against 9 different browsers.
Uh-huh.
It's daunting. It's incredibly daunting.
Well, let me think. I don't even know if I could think of 9 different browsers. Let's see. So, there's probably 3 flavors of IE, Chrome. Yep. Mozilla, Firefox,
3 Safari,
WebKit.
Mm-hmm. Testing in like the past, the
Opera,
current, and the future browser. Yeah,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Opera. So I mean, it's
so you have to do all 3 versions. Really, yeah, I see. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It just keeps adding up and adding up. And now that Chrome's out, it just keeps getting tacked on. So like right now, I'm trying to do some more work into making it easier to do some really good continuous integration testing for JavaScript that'll work across all these browsers simultaneously.
Oh.
And it's a huge challenge, but I think if it's done right, people will be really excited about this.
You just need a big robot that can push the keys on the keyboard and has a giant camera on it and watch the screen.
So what other, tell us more about your development environment.
Okay. So personally, I use Vim, and it usually involves a lot of screen sessions running across servers and lots of little shell scripts to generate all the my test cases.
So in addition to your 14 chat rooms, you've got 14 Vim windows open, 8 shells, screen is running in 5 different... Yeah, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
I can see. And how big is your monitor? 430
24 inches. Inch.
Yeah,
24.
Really? That's all? All right. Okay.
What kind of source code control are you using?
For jQuery, we use Subversion right now, but for some of the new stuff like Sizzle, we're using Git.
Yay, Git! Yeah.
So it's possible that we might be moving a jQuery over to Git. We're not sure. We're still evaluating that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been using Git quite a bit.
Git's coming on strong. I tell you, I see it everywhere now. Yeah. GitHub's done a lot to help that.
Mm-hmm. How much JavaScript do I need to understand before I can at least get some benefit out of looking at jQuery?
So best places to look, I would say, okay, so there's a number of really good websites. Learningjquery.com, I think, mm-hmm. is a really great one. Mm-hmm. In addition to our main website.
Which is, by the way, jquery.com, not jquery.org, jquery.com.
On our main website, we do a really good job collecting all the tutorials that we can find.
Yes.
Is that a media wiki behind that?
Yep, it's a media wiki.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
I saw the edit marks, and I should have realized. Of course, it's media wiki. Yeah.
we make it look nice.
Yeah.
We would find lots of tutorials there, but there's also sites like Learning jQuery, Visual jQuery, and there's all sorts of blogs now that blog about jQuery. And then in addition to a couple books that are out, there's jQuery in Action, there's Learning jQuery, and so, there's tons of really good resources.
I hear you even have a book on jQuery.
Well, it looks like JavaScript. I have books on JavaScript. I wrote one called Pro JavaScript Techniques. That was from A-Press. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing a new one now called Secrets of the JavaScript Ninja.
Ooh.
And that'll be out this year.
I saw the announcement for that. That looks really cool.
You'll have to get the TV Ninja to do a promo for you.
Ask him.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yes, get it to go.
Oh, he was
he actually uses jQuery.
Very cool.
Yeah, so maybe I can con him into it.
it's almost got to the point that nobody doesn't use jQuery.
Yeah.
Would you suggest for somebody, some people say that these libraries hide the language and it's better to learn the language first, then learn jQuery. Would you suggest that somebody study JavaScript and then learn the libraries?
So I would say, okay. So I mean, I take a pretty controversial view, but I would say no. That the big part is that
you're going to learn a lot of crap that you don't need to know.
The thing is that you when you start on day one, you don't want to spend 4 of your 8 hours running JavaScript of dealing with all these stupid
broken
issues.
Broken DOM.
What you really want to do is, I've talked with a number of people, and especially there's been a good chunk of users who started using jQuery who have first never programmed JavaScript before, but even users who have never ever programmed before, let alone JavaScript, and they've all said that that they just had a great experience, that they were able to start and they learned more about the JavaScript language than they ever had before. And in a lot of ways, I think using a library can really be an accelerant that, that users, who were normally going slow and having such a hard time, learning things, that now, they don't have to worry about that anymore. They can just fly. And then
one of the most common problems you have, like when you start, is like, how come my JavaScript only works some of the time, depending on how fast the page loads, because not all the elements are rendered yet. So you have to learn how to do this, wait until the page is completely loaded, then do something. And that's crazy syntax if you're doing it just with native DOM. But you've got $document.ready do this, right? Something like that?
Exactly. And it's, I mean, JavaScript is just a series of gotchas that you got to learn over.
Minefield, a definite minefield.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that when you talk to experienced JavaScript developers, I should say, usually when people improve their JavaScript knowledge, they do it in two different directions, the two different axes. One is knowledge of the language. There are people who have excellent knowledge of the language. I would say like Douglas Crockford, I would say, is like one of the best people who has excellent knowledge of the JavaScript language. But then there's the other axes, which is knowledge of obscure browser stuff. And it's not often you find people who are good on both these axes. Because finding weird stuff, that's just something that you have to do over time as you work and as you encounter more weird things.
And it helps having a user base of people that are on those weird browsers that say, hey, this didn't work when the sun was at 3/4 around the group,
It certainly feels that way sometimes.
I'm kind of with you on that. I think being productive right away is important to kind of just reinforcing your learning. You just go, oh, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and if
absolutely. You're
beating your head against a wall with faulty DOM models, I think that's not a good thing.
I think some of my I think my favorite one of my favorite conversations. So I run into people at conferences and stuff, and I ran into an interaction designer, and he was purely designed, CSS only, no JavaScript, and he said, I've been trying to convince the boss that we needed to do this, and we needed to have this drag and drop so that we could, and make things easier to group together. And he said, well, I could do that. And so he told the boss, that we needed this, and then the meeting was going to be in 15 minutes. So he downloaded jQuery, he added drag and drop to his page. He went into the meeting and he said, look, here it is. And they're like, wow, all right, let's do it. And
that's cool.
It's just great because I like being able to, in this way, jQuery is empowering people.
Right.
And I think that's great.
How long has jQuery been around in the sense of going through revisions that would outdate some of the early tutorials? I mean, if I just Google for a tutorial, am I going to find something that is sort of best practices for modern jQuery?
Yeah. I think you would. A lot of the tutorials just on, jQuery.com, we make sure that they're, up to date as well. We generally try to keep the API pretty stable in between releases.
So it's pretty safe if I say Google for I want to do drag and drop with jQuery, I'll find some example somewhere, and whatever comes up is probably pretty likely to be something I can use that's not going to be too insane.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. I'm excited now. I'm gonna be firing up some Google queries after we get done.
I've tried to learn JavaScript many times, and I've always given up for that crazy reason. And this sounds like something I might want to tackle. I think I could actually learn this. Somebody said in the Ricardo said in the chat room, and I think this is I think pretty apt that designers love jQuery because it's very simple, and programmers love it because it's very flexible. You know, you've kind of got a great balance of the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I find it to be amusing since I have a computer science background here to see so many designers and non-programmers really latch onto it as well. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's great. I love it.
Speaking of JavaScript, as a tie-in to one of our previous shows, I understand that you've done something pretty cool with JavaScript, something about implementing processing on JavaScript.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So last May, I released a project I called processing.js. And this was a port of the processing visualization language over to JavaScript on the canvas element. And it's a parser for the language and an implementation of the processing API as well. People are doing some really cool stuff with it. Just all sorts of crazy things of building games, building visualizations, and it's pretty cool.
Use jQuery? Somebody used jQuery to do that Mona Lisa design?
Oh, probably.
Yeah. I mean, so I know it's been implemented in JavaScript. I'm sure they did use jQuery to do it.
When are you porting Linux to JavaScript?
You could.
Be right around the corner.
You could, right? I mean, you could. It might be slow.
Only in the sense that it's Turing.
I think the craziest one, the craziest thing I saw was I was in Tokyo and someone showed me this thing that they've written where they ported the Java JVM to run in JavaScript in a browser. Mm. So they actually wrote a bytecode interpreter inside the browser, and so you could take a compiled Java code, dump it in your browser, and it would run. It was the most insane thing I had seen, if there's something crazy you can do with JavaScript, someone out there is doing it.
Well, there is somebody that ported already, or actually built the Perl 6 bytecode language in JavaScript, at least an early implementation of it, so you could already compile Perl 6 code down to JavaScript. That was pretty good.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, it's great to talk to you, and I just want to say that everybody in the chat room is thanking you, John. I think that I think you're in a way you're one of the heroes of the web programming community because of jQuery. I mean, we've talked a lot about prototypes, Scriptaculous, UE, but there's something about this library that's really caught people and makes people smile. You've really done a good job. There's a lot of thank yous. They're calling you the rock star of JavaScript. And you're going to be speaking, aren't you, about jQuery soon?
Oh, yeah. I do. I do a number of speaking engagements. I think I'm actually leading a panel up coming soon here at South by Southwest with a number of the other framework people. So there's going to be someone from YUI, someone from Prototype, someone from Dojo. I think I'm going to try and get a MooTools guy on the panel.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
So yeah, just get everyone there, and we'll have a nice, good discussion. I think it's interesting because like the JavaScript space, we don't have. I think we're usually pretty good. Like the arguments or the debates that go on are pretty good natured, and there's a lot of good collaboration. People are usually kind of bummed when they see the library panel discussions.
Yeah, they want you to fight.
They want
cage
blood.
Match.
They really do. It's so funny the way. But you have a greater enemy, which is Internet Explorer 5, 6, and 7. And so that unifies you.
The evil Dom.
The Dom is strong in this one. So I can understand that. I mean, you're all united in the same fight, to make this all work.
Hey, before we go, why jQuery? Where'd the name come from?
So I had a couple names that I was playing around with. I found a notebook the other day where I had written down CSS query, I think was one. Mm-hmm. And I jotted down different names. And honestly, I went for the one that had a domain name available. in this case, it was JavaScript query, just jQuery.
iQuery already taken? jQuery, finally!
I think a good choice.
That's great. It is. It's a very good choice. It rolls off the tongue. It makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And like I said, John, everybody's very grateful to you for rationalizing this space. And you know, even if you're not a programmer or even a designer, we all should be grateful because it's used in so many places and it really makes the web much more usable all around. And that's another good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Anywhere you want to plug, you go to jquery.com to find out more about jQuery. You have your own site, though, don't you?
Yep. That's ejohn.org. And I also have a Twitter account, and I'm J.E. Resig on Twitter.
R-E-S-I-G. J-E-R-E-S-I-G. And I'm going to follow you right now.
Awesome.
I love following interesting people on Twitter because you just, you know, you learn so much. Thank you, John.
I'm already following him.
Oh, well, there you go. You're way ahead of me. Thank you, John.
Yep, thank you.
Take care. John Resig, and jquery.com is the place to go to find out more about that. Yeah, we've talked about this before, how I'm just kind of this, you know, amateur programmer, but I collect languages. And I always really wanted to learn JavaScript. I thought, boy, this, of all the languages, this would be one of the most useful to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But so turned off by, you know, the issues you have to resolve and the inconsistencies and all of that. And so I can see what he's saying, that having a library that hides a lot of that stuff makes you productive faster and gives you that sense of, you know, accomplishment.
Well, not only that, but, you know, consider, you know, I'm a web developer, web programmer. That's part of what I do for a living. And, you know, my client's going to be and say, we want to put some JavaScript on here. But I have to say, well, I don't have the time or energy to develop and test this on 6 browsers. You know, I need to get this to work right the first time.
Right.
You know, I've got Firefox and Safari, and I'm happy with those two. And I have to say I'm done. And you know, I don't have anything that runs Windows, so I can't run any of the IE browsers or anything like that on Windows. So something like jQuery gives me confidence that I can deploy something that will at least not completely blow up when we get onto odd places that I haven't been before. And it's essential for small developers like me to try to do that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So this was great. He was really entertaining.
I just loved it. Yeah.
And so this is one of those shows there, you know, what I'm going to be doing after we finish here is I'm going to be going off and playing around with all the examples.
Me too.
And
yeah.
Really just, you know, maybe I'll, and there's a Seaside Smalltalk wrapper on jQuery already. So I can introduce that into my Seaside pages that I'm creating. So this will be really nice.
Well,
so.
And we've got jQuery running on twit.tv on leoville.com I don't know anything about it, but some plugins require jQuery, you know, so. Mm-hmm. I'll just install it. But I've also learned something here about how to implement it on a site. I should really pull from that Google cache as opposed to loading my own jQuery for my user's benefit, because they'll probably already have the Google version cached on their
exactly. Saves a bit, yes.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go change our jQuery load on Leoville. And I'm sure Gordon did it right on twit.tv, but I'm just going, oh, I don't know. I guess I have to load this. I don't know.
So, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Well, that was a lot of fun. Definitely a lot of fun talking to this guy.
Really,
yeah.
Really cool.
Mr. Resig.
How is it going with Squeak and Seaside? You've got a new version coming soon, yeah?
Exactly. In fact, earlier today I was on my biweekly Squeak board. Oops, not supposed to call it the board anymore. The leadership team. We've restrated everything. But I'm on the board of Squeak for this year. Actually, elections are coming up again. We'll see how that goes. But one of the projects we've been working on like all year, and actually even before I came on the board, was to get Squeak's license squeaky clean, as it were, since the Squeak was originally released as Apple Smalltalk. APDA Smalltalk. And so it carried with it for the first few years this license that was really a kind of a hold Apple harmless kind of license. It had a lot of language in there that's not really compliant with open source licenses we think of them. And so the last couple of years, the Squeak leaders have been figuring out how to relicense it under a much more clean license. I believe it's the Apache 2.0 license. But trying to relicense under effectively an MIT-style license. And we're just about done. In fact, the people that are really pushing this were the eToys people, because they have eToys on the OLPC, and they had to make sure that the OLPC's licenses were all very clean. So they went through and took all the changes between the original Squeak, which had been relicensed by Apple under a friendly license, and the current Squeak. They had to go back to all 200 or so contributors. And get signatures from all of them to say, yes, that slight change in license is okay with us. And so it wasn't until just recently, like the last 2 months, that the eToys was finally relicensed under a really official signatures and a big book sitting at VPRI, license, that all clean. Now, unfortunately, that was done against the 3.8 release, which was 2 years ago. We have to now take that, and on the Squeak team, we have to figure out how to apply those same changes to 3.10.2, the current release. And we've uncovered some more signatures that we have to get because there's more code that's been added between the two. But once this is all done, and we're expecting it probably to happen within the next 2 months, Squeak 4.0 will be released, and that will be licensed squeaky clean. You can use it under an MIT-style license and use it for whatever you want. And then all development will be based on that, which will be really nice. But this is the importance, though, of picking the right license when you start, because you can't just have a project for a couple of years and say, oh, I'm sorry, we really didn't want GPL2, we wanted GPL3. You can't just do that unilaterally. You have to take everybody that contributed and say, yeah, that's okay with me too. Unless they did like the FSF dev, which is sign over your rights to the Free Software Foundation so that they don't have to go back to the individuals.
We've kind of learned this license hell on the Twit Army because, it's a Faro. It's the GNU of Faro network license. Which means that even when our designers do modifications to the code base to support the design, add jQuery, let's say, we've got to feed it back into the repository. The Faro license requires us to do that.
Yeah, and there was some complication between the non-commercial license that you had and Wikipedia too.
So there's another one. We wanted, and Wikipedia is obviously fighting. They're changing their license to a Creative Commons license, I gather. But it's been kind of a mess, and so there's a lot of issues like that.
The GFDL is not compatible with a non-commercial CC license.
So I had non-commercial, which I had to take off.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's just a mess. So this is why, people at home sometimes wonder why I sometimes harp on licenses when I get to each one of these shows.
Right.
But it really is important because, there are some people that need, not there are some, most people should be worried about whether their dotted I's and crossed D's are correct if they ever plan on using this in a commercial arena or redistribute their code, especially.
It kind of can nip you. I wasn't paying attention and all of a sudden, I got an email from Prodromo saying, you got to resubmit this code to the repository. I said, what?
I mean, imagine the OLPC project, which is trying to be very charitable and useful to a lot of developing countries. Imagine somebody who had code that hadn't been relicensed in Squeak now saying, I want $5 per machine that you've shipped already.
Exactly.
And this is a machine only costs $200. But, if you're taking the copyright away, if you're not respecting the copyright, you're in trouble.
Nobody develops in a vacuum anymore. Nobody's writing a program from scratch. So
everybody's building everything else. This is, we've been talking about this for weeks, is that open source is about people taking other things and adapting and adopting it and customizing it for what they need to do. And without a clean license, without a license that really lets you do what you need to do, the people that are trying to do the right thing with your code can't do the right thing either. And this is why we have to think about this from day one. What is the license going to be?
We had Eben Moglen, the guy who did GPL3, and then by the way, said, I'm done. I'm off the team. Almost killed me. But I think he did all the GPLs. But we had him on with Chris DeBona a few episodes back. Listen to that episode. It's fascinating. And Eben's a very good talker and really explains why all this stuff is important.
Speaking of episodes going back, how about some episodes going forward, Leo?
What do you got planned?
Oh, my God. I tell you, we filled up all of February and March now. This has just been great. I've got coming up next week, we've got the guys from Etoile, which is the open source operating system that sort of sits on top of OpenStep. We talked to the OpenStep guys. So this is the layer. OpenStep was just the libraries. This is actually an end user layer. Effectively, we're building OS X, all the user interface, all the retail stuff, all the stuff that actually interacts with the screen and stuff like that. And I hear there's a Smalltalk component. Yay. So we got to get these guys on talking about that. They just had a recent release. So we'll get David Gisnell and Quentin Math talking about that.
Fun.
That's next week.
Yeah.
We've got the guys from XBMC coming up after that. Just added to the schedule, we've got the developers of TuxPaint.
That's great.
So it should be pretty cool. Too bad it's not a visual show. You'll have to follow along at home in your mind,
or watch our live stream because it is visual. And I'll load up TuxPaint. I think we've talked to them on Jumping Monkeys. I think we've talked to them before. I think I'm not sure. Anyway, that'll be fun.
Very cool. And then the guys from ZFS still on the schedule,
that's
coming up.
Interesting.
The file system from Sun there.
Now he's going to come in studio with us.
Exactly. So yeah. He's going to be there. And I'm actually going to be probably calling in from Portland. So this will be weird. The guest will be there and I'll be calling in on the Skype remote, which will be great. And also, Dave Anderson, this is just added, Dave Anderson of Boink. Boink is the technology behind like folding at home and things like that, where you get to share all your processors across everything. So I know you've got a big folding component, right? You've got the whole team, Leo team.
We have
folding,
a very big team. Yeah. And if anybody wants to follow our folding at home team, I think it's LeoVilleAtHome.com. I'll get you the URL here.
Exactly. And so the Boink software is what allows that to actually happen behind the scenes. And so we've got David Anderson from that project in coming and talking about that. And just briefly, we've got Arduino still coming up, Ebox coming up, and Wubby coming up. So we've got some really, really interesting shows coming up. So I'm really really excited about the future schedule here.
Very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of future schedule, there we go. Look at all the segues I did today. This is great. I will be... in a couple of weeks, if you are going to the Southern California Linux Expo, Scale, we talked to the Scale guys a few months ago. If you're going to Scale, I will be there, and I will be actually in Floss Weekly official capacity. I will be wearing a press badge, interviewing people as I walk around there, but feel free to come up and, I've been known to autograph a book or two. So anyway, but, you know, whatever you want to do.
Bring your Randall books.
Yeah, Learning Perl, Programming Perl, Learning Perl for Win32, Effective Perl Programming, Object Oriented Perl.
You don't have to say them all.
Let's see.
Perls of Wisdom, the latest one. Wisdom, bring Perls of Wisdom.
There
so Scale is the Southern California Linux Expo, and it's coming up February 20th, 21st, and 22nd. You can find out more at, let's give them a plug, at SoCalLinuxExpo.org.
And they had a discount code for us, didn't they?
Oh, was it Twitter?
Go back and listen to that show. It's in that.
I wish I remembered. Well, yeah, go back and listen to the Scale show. They'll be at the Westin, I think. The Westin LA Airport. So, yeah, that's a nice event. If you're in the Southern California area, that's a great event. Or if you're in Portland and you just hop a plane.
Exactly. That's what I'm hoping.
Come on down.
Or driving or something. I know there's going to be some way I'm going to get there. So that's my
Scale will be fun. Good.
Yep.
Good. All right. Well, thank you, Randall. Randall One Arm Schwartz.
Mm-hmm. For a little bit.
Soon to be two arms.
We hope.
And with his massive ulna.
Me and my ulna. Just a half a millimeter too long.
Randall will be appearing at the karaoke bars in Portland area over the next couple of weeks.
Even tonight, yes.
Look for him. You'll hear Kermit the Frog coming out of the door.
Hey-ho. Hello, Randall.
See you later.